This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the milk packing district, in the heart of glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to your waiting ears, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A study shows that students who are studying abroad drink more. Two women are stabbed and a man is detained in Salem. And the Vancouver City Council opposes liquor initiatives.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, 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 for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, October 12th, 2010. Vancouver City Council members voted last night on their mayor's resolution that opposes two liquor initiatives on the November 2nd ballot. Initiatives 1100 and 1105 would both remove the state monopoly on the sale of spirits. But city budget officials said this would cost the city millions of dollars annually. Vancouver's resolution passed with four council members voting in favor and one member abstaining. Only one member voted in opposition to the resolution. Other cities, including Auburn, Pasco, Sumner, and Cheney, have all passed resolutions opposing I-1100 and I-1105.
This is one of those stories that confused me right out of the gate, because it was they were opposing legislation which would overturn something which then made illegal a prohibition on something else. So the end result of this is, I don't know who was on what side of the equation here. Please do explain one more time, using very small words as though I were a tiny child.
Well, imagine, if you will, if here in Oregon we had, say, a state monopoly on the sale of liquor.
Yes. I'll try to imagine a situation in which that might be the case. Wait, hold on. Now I need to conjure up the appropriate golem-faced figure who could inevitably be pulled over for drunk driving. Okay, done. Got it.
Yeah, imagine, if you will, a mafia-like organization that owns everything.
Sir, I take umbrage at your implication that... No, it's true. All right. Yes?
And that there is no, say, free market in the state of Oregon. If there was such a case, perhaps. No free market where people could just own liquor stores and sell alcohol, that they would have to go through this, that in fact they would not be able to do this, that all liquor was sold.
Wait,
by
hold on
the
a second
state.
Hold on, wait a minute, this is sarcasm you're dealing in right here.
Well, apparently in Washington there are some people who think that maybe they could get rid of that kind of a thing, that the state monopoly on liquor sales is not necessarily, you know, in everyone's best interest.
I'm back to not understanding this at all. So is there currently a monopoly? So is it a deal right now in Washington where the state sells everything?
Yeah, Washington owns their liquor stores.
And people want to be able to sell it themselves, like, yeah, Bob's Boozerama or whatever.
Yeah.
And the state, unsurprisingly, is opposed to this.
Yeah, they're trying to do it. Apparently, cities are trying to pass initiatives, I guess. I'm not sure how they would remove the state monopoly. I guess they could do it within their own city.
Would it be like a county jurisdiction thing, or maybe,
I guess,
or within,
yeah,
the city limits? All
Which
right.
would put us in that sort of situation, like there's dry counties and not dry counties.
Hello, Monmouth.
Only in this case, there would be like free market counties and only state-run liquor stores counties or something like that, or cities. Anyway, but the city of Vancouver, people who are opposing it have said for some reason that it would cost the city millions of dollars. And I'm not sure why, unless it's because they're saying that's because they would not get the kickbacks from the state for the liquor stores. Because the way it works now is, at least in Oregon, the state gives a percentage of the total sales back to the cities for revenue.
All right, well, it seems like if you're selling booze, though, that's sort of a no-lose situation. I mean, that's one of those things in which you can't... You would actively have to work to not profit by selling alcohol in this world, I would think.
They wouldn't be getting the money directly from the state.
They would just get the normal money from alcoholics that everybody else has to set away.
Right, and from fees that they would charge bars and restaurants and liquor stores.
You know what I realized about halfway through this discussion? I don't live in Vancouver, and grace of God willing, I'm never going to live in Vancouver. No offense. So this applies to me not at all.
Well, I think that it's valuable to think about, because if it did happen in Vancouver...
It could happen here.
Yeah, it might start in encouraging people here in Oregon to go, hey, OLCC, hey, what's with that?
What gives with that?
Yeah.
All right.
So it's about the level of enthusiasm we would probably have for it.
So we could march across the bridge like communism or syphilis.
Right.
Only
with bottles of booze in our hands, staggering and throwing up all the way.
Sort of a Portland-themed march. It's the same theme march they have actually every Saturday and Friday night in my neighborhood, which is not unlike the march where there's portly people in latex pants carrying a duffel bag heading to the sex club. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. You can also get this program on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. It's available via iTunes and is a direct MP3 download later on at this website or at legionofnews.com. This is Don Taylor.
The Secret Service says it questioned and released an overexuberant fan of President Barack Obama who had tossed a paperback book near the president at a Philadelphia rally on Sunday.
President who?
Barack Obama.
So this isn't Ted Obama, because I keep hearing about that guy. He's everywhere.
Is there a Ted Obama?
No.
Is he related to Barack Obama in any way? Okay.
I'm not really hearing about a Ted Obama.
So you're just hearing Barack Obama, but you're thinking Ted Obama.
That's right. In my head, I've got a defective Babel diode or something. Everything just comes out as Ted.
Well, spokesman Ed Donovan said the man had written the book, a paperback book, and had hoped the president would read it, so he...
That's always the way that works, by the way. You print something, and then you send it to the White House saying, President must read this immediately. Try to do it in a childlike scrawl in the front of the envelope, and use crayon, if possible, and then just put, like, a skull and crossbones on the front. And that'll get you put to the top of the pile. Not the pile you were probably hoping for, but a pile nonetheless.
Yeah, I think it was a Jack Handy deep thought where he said, you know, I made a chocolate gun for the president, and I want to make sure he gets it, so I better run up to him and hand it to him real fast.
I actually there's a friend of mine many years ago who did a talk radio program, and a listener called up and made, I forget what it was. The listener made some comment, and it was just, you know, it was during the Clinton era, so there was jackassery afoot everywhere. And I forget what the comment was. I heard it, and it wasn't a threat, but it was one of those things. It was, you know, it was just the person who's not funny trying to be funny. And they said something that I guess if you were looking through some sort of paranoid kaleidoscope could be perceived as being threatening to the president. Anyway, the point is, there's just some caller who said this, and then, you know, the guy goes on with his show, and he gets off the air, and there's, I swear to Christ, like 40 minutes later, there's like Secret Service guys like in the lobby. And he was on a station that was, if you were in the parking lot, you had trouble getting the station. It was like 5 watts or something. It was like it's one of those things that you really, really, like guys on shortwave were the only people who were ever able to pick the frequency up. But man, I'll be damned if there weren't guys talking into the cuffs of their shirts in the lobby of the station as soon as he got done. You want to screw with that?
No.
They'll screw you so hard you can't walk anymore. Here's Don Taylor.
A new poll suggests Republicans are more enthusiastic than Democrats about voting in the upcoming midterm election. President Barack Obama.
Who?
Barack Obama. Tried to rally young Democrats at a rally in Philadelphia Sunday, urging them to go to the polls.
I'm picturing just a big sort of echoing hall, a hall just filled with sadness and the reverberated sounds of broken dreams.
Please vote.
I encourage you all. I'm sorry, is there anybody here? Tony, can turn the lights. No, there doesn't appear to be anybody in the hall today. Speaking to myself.
So does he say folks or gonna? in this first clip.
I'm going to go
on
home.
I'm waiting to find out.
I'm going to head on home and do some drinking. These folks aren't showing up. Is this Obama 1? What is this cut?
This is a 3.
Obama 3.
It's not as if the Republicans are offering new ideas. It's not as if the Republican leaders have changed their agenda since the last time they ran Washington.
Okay.
Wow. He's not only gets folksy with people now, his voice gets really high at the end of his sentences.
And he inflects a lot at the end. He goes up when he talks.
Obama says the Republicans' agenda is no different today than it was before he was elected.
This is Obama
4.
Let's see if I've got... What are the odds, do you suppose, that Obama 4 is going to play correctly? It's as though the universe is just willing me to play this Obama 3 cut over and over again. This is a battle of wills in which I will prevail.
Don't give in.
No, I'm not. The people have got to hear, Don. Or perhaps not, possibly. Wait for it.
Maybe his voice went up so high in pitch only dogs can hear it.
I say to you now. All right. Who's a good electorate?
He's like Daryl Hannah in Splash.
All right. This is Obama 4. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Barack Obama.
We know what this agenda was. You cut taxes, mostly for millionaires and billionaires.
What is the first thing? He said we're in Genoa?
We know what this agenda was.
Gender.
You cut taxes,
the
mostly
gender.
For millionaires and billionaires.
Okay.
Right. You cut regulations for special interests. You try to bust the unions. You cut back on investments in education and clean energy and research and technology.
Somebody's getting grumpy. You know, gender...
He hasn't sounded that energetic, though, since he was running for president.
No, you know, I've got the best soundbite of him. I won't be able to play it right now because I didn't realize I was really going to have a need for it. It's something I haven't played in a long time. I'll dig it. I got the best soundbite of him right before the election. He said the greatest thing that any president has ever said. I'll put it this way. He said the greatest thing that any president who was aware that he was being recorded has ever said. All right, so there's that. Agenda, by the way, that is the second-level boss in the new version of Metroid. Here's Don Taylor. Behold, I am the agenda.
I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
That's
now.
That's okay. Sometimes I just make things up, and I'm referencing, here's the thing, just so you know, and I'm only going to say this once, and I'll deny it if this is ever settled out again. And if this is played back in the future, I will insist that this is, in fact, a fabricated recording. Sometimes I make pop culture references to things that don't actually exist. Like one out of like every 25 pop culture references is to like a video game or movie doesn't actually exist anywhere.
So the thing is, if you can't be like as smart as, say, Dennis Miller, you just make yourself sound like Dennis Miller by saying things so obscure they don't actually exist.
Which, in retrospect, is probably what he was doing all those years, you know? He was just, you know...
Just like Thomas Pynchon on the boat with the harpoon when he was putting those shoes on and he was hanging with Henry Miller and they were eating a hammer.
Exactly. Or like a fake, I don't want to get all, you know, Manicheski on you about it or anything. You know, like there is no there is no Manicheski. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Bicyclists will have their own traffic light in North Portland as part of the city's effort to make a dangerous intersection safer for people on bikes. The bicycle-only traffic signal was erected at the intersection of North Broadway and Williams Avenues. It will separate the movement of cyclists from drivers who are trying to turn their vehicles to the right. In addition to the new traffic light, there are also new signs and lane markings.
Where is this going to be? Is it one location or multiple locations?
This is just one place right now, North Broadway and Williams.
Hold on a second. So North Broadway and... So where is Williams?
I don't know.
This is some damn place that doesn't affect me, I suppose. And so it's their own stoplight. So is it? But did you say it's for a right-hand turn, or is it to go forward?
I think it's so people don't turn right into people on bicycles. It's like there's a right turn signal and a bicycle signal.
See, that actually makes sense. See, that way makes way more sense than like these damn green the bike boxes or that weird thing we were talking about with Anna Griffin last week, which I never even noticed until you pointed it out. So that was money well spent, everyone. Where it's the bicyclist, and then he's on the street, and there's like the arrows. And I guess we never really did figure out in the room what it meant. Anna went and looked it up at some point, and it meant like 700 different things, none of which could be sussed out by just looking at the icon itself.
Well, I went and looked them up. They're called Sharrows.
Sharrows. Is that a new cereal?
To remind you that you're supposed to share, that you're sharing the street with the bicyclist. And actually, wherever the icon is in the street is where the bicyclist is supposed to be riding. So like over here on Clay, on my way to work every day, there's, they got the bicycle signals in the lane, and I didn't know what they meant.
Well, that doesn't make any sense, though, because they're not downtown. And downtown is where you really need them, because downtown is where people need to be reminded that bicyclists are supposed to be in the middle of the road.
I don't know what to tell you.
Clearly, this is another city that's going to have to fall under the Emerson hammer when the revolution comes.
I don't think the city that works is really working quite so well all the time.
It works sporadically, just on things you don't want. And we're going to make alcohol harder to find, so folks can't spend the weekend getting drunk. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes your way. Yes, you, your way at 1 p.m. Coming up today, Pop Culture Authority. We answer the question, which may or may not have been burning in your soul, lo, these many years. Why was E.T. rated PG? And that's an unfortunate rhyme that I'm going to try to avoid in future forward promotions. We'll have another installment of the greatest songs ever made, Geek Watch, and more. That is all coming on the Rick Emerson radio program at 1 p.m. This is Legion of News. Here's Don Taylor.
This week on Larry King Live, Afghan President Hamid Karzai talked about politics, the Taliban, and his country's faith in the U.S. partnership to establish stability. Karzai says he has a good working relationship with President Obama, but he says some Afghans are concerned about being abandoned. He says it happened before when Afghanistan defeated the Soviets.
The international community supported us, but then after their defeat, we were abandoned and forgotten immediately, including by the United States. Now that fear lingers on.
Well, I think we've figured out the solution here. The solution is don't win your wars. Just, you know, next time a country comes in and they want to roll over you with something, just sort of lie back and enjoy it, Afghanistan. And then you won't have all this, you know, this issue of the, you know, the country coming in and then saying, fine, we will go back home and leave you to your own devices, which are clearly, like, not working out all that well. Their own devices, they don't really have devices. They just have device, and it's like a pointed stick. That's kind of the only device they've come up with over there.
Karzai says Afghan leaders have been talking with the Taliban. He says its members are still Afghan nationals, some who have been led astray.
Unofficial personal contacts have been going on for quite some time. Now that the Peace Council has come into existence, these talks will go on and will go on officially and more rigorously.
I believe it is rigorously. What he's trying to say there. All right. How is it you suppose they're communicating with the Taliban when, like, every method of communication you would use to communicate with them is, in fact, forbid? You can't even fly kites. I mean, really, let's be honest. It's not like you're going to be able to, you know, send them a telex or anything.
Karzai says he hopes to get some Afghan nationals back on board with the anti-terror agenda.
Yes.
Al-Qaeda and the other terrorist networks who are ideologically against us all, who are working against Afghanistan knowingly and out of a purpose of hatred and enmity, those, of course, we have to work against.
You know, Larry King is just sitting there just thinking about a pastrami sandwich. He's like, I can't wait to get over to Elaine's and have some bourbon and forget about this guy.
I could have been interviewing abroad.
So the burqa. I mean, do you have to do your business through the burqa? Or what? Is it a slit in the front? How does that work?
I tried to get Angie Dickinson, but no, they stick me with this guy.
Does your religion prohibit the consumption of chocolate phosphates? Please to explain. You are listening to, by the way, I found that Obama cut. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. So this is a thing that Obama said. I might be wrong about the specific day, but it was like maybe it was in the six-month window. And I think less than that. I mean, I think it was literally within like 60 days before the election, because it was the sort of thing. This is where right-wing nutcases really dropped the ball. And I am looking at you, my in-laws. This is where you just failed like nobody's business. It was, you know, because they're always, you know, just making a bunch of stuff up about Obama. Just all this jive that he's, you know, he's like not born here. And he's, you know, and he's... did you see that Onion headline the other day? 1 in 5 Americans believe Obama to be a cactus. You know, so they're just like fabricating things, you know, about him. And then he hands them something. It was almost like, I remember the glory days of a little while ago, you know, when there was the run-up to the election and, you know, America was clutching hope to its bosom and walking forward into the future with the brightly lit flame of something, of Macheski. And they were, you know, getting ready. And it was like Obama had it in the bag, like, so much. I mean, everybody knew he was going to win. There was no way John McCain was going to win anything. This was like back in 96 when Clinton was running against Dole. And Dole gets to a game of inches. There's no inches, Bob. There's no inches, no game. It's, you know, a foregone. It was the definition of a fait accompli. And it was like Obama was actually, it was sort of great because he was almost shoving it in their faces in like the 30 days or so before the campaign. This is then candidate, but even at that point, the inevitable president who...
Barack Obama.
Okay. Now, Don, see if you can tell me the historical significance of what Barack Obama is saying right here.
Now, I just want you to know,
98% of small businesses make less than $250,000. 99.9% of plumbers make less than $250,000.
That's a Joe the Plumber reference.
So don't be hoodwinked. Don't be bamboozled. Don't fall for the okie doke. No matter what John McCain may claim.
And I think I've actually got a second soundbite. I don't know if it's an edit of the...
So don't be hoodwinked. Yeah. Don't be bamboozled.
What do you suppose is the significance of that phrase, Don? Don't be hoodwinked, don't be bamboozled. Who else might have said something like that?
I'm not sure. I was thinking it was a Spike Lee reference, but then what do I know?
Well, it is a Spike Lee reference, but it was Spike Lee quoting... It's Malcolm X. It's
Malcolm X. Okay,
It's from, and this is depicted.
I had this vague. I guess apparently I had some of that vaguely stuck in my head somewhere, but not.
This is one of those, and it's a speech that Malcolm X gave a lot. He didn't just give it in one place, but it's in the movie. It's in the Spike Lee joint, Malcolm X, but faithfully rendered. It's not one of those things. It's a sort of faction. It is a thing that Malcolm X used to say all the time when he was out, sort of, you know, speaking to folks, and he would say, you know, you've been took, you've been hoodwinked, you've been bamboozled, run amok. Led astray. And it was specifically you've been hoodwinked, you've been bamboozled. If you were to look up words in the dictionary and just figure out what is the statistical probability that of all of the things that he could have said back to back in a speech, you've been hoodwinked, you've been bamboozled, it's like a skillion to one. So it's like 30 days before the election, candidate Barack Obama is in fact quoting Malcolm X. And it was like he was just handing it to just uptight, tight-assed white people everywhere going, here you go. I'm actually quoting Malcolm X. Here you go. Something to forward. In case you don't have a chain email for tomorrow, I have given you tomorrow's email. And nobody picked up on it. And I just kept waiting.
Because I guess most of them didn't know. So really it ended up just sort of being a secret wink and a handshake to black voters.
Oh, and to me, Rick Emerson. Because I'm chocolate on the inside. And so I just kept waiting for the firestorm to happen. And then I was so disappointed when it didn't. Because, you know, I just like rancor. And when I'm denied, you know, it just doesn't, you know.
It's like your soul is fed by anger and pain.
It's like my wings are taken away, Dawn, every time there is not division or entropy sown in this country. It's like wings are taken away and another kitten is born. A hateful, hateful kitten. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. We want to welcome aboard a brand new business partner. That is Squires Electric. First and foremost, you can find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com. And here's what you need to know. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They've been in Portland for 12 years, and they handle wiring of any kind at all. In other words, you know, people typically think of electric wiring, which is, you know, the power starts... I don't know, on the moon or something, and then it comes out of your house and you run a hairdryer. I don't really know. But in between, there's math of some kind.
The moon?
Well, really? You know, or someplace. Well, you can't prove it's not the moon, Dawn.
No, that's true.
Why do you support terrorism?
I can't prove it doesn't.
But that's I was talking about yesterday. I've got this whole issue with my furnace happening where the fan on my downstairs furnace is busted, and so I'm afraid to turn it on for fear that the heat will just build up inside, and then I will start some sort of nuclear fission in my basement, or I'll just open up like a portal to someplace bad, and then spiders will come out of it. Because I don't know how any of that stuff works. I just got nothing. God forbid you start adding in like the plumbing and Ethernet wiring and all of that stuff which comes together, and it's like everything in your house is now connected to everything else. I mean, you go buy a hot tub at this point. It probably comes with like a Kindle mounted into it or something, and then you got something else you got to wire up, and it's all very confusing.
Yeah, you could try to fix the furnace yourself, and the next thing you know, warm water and spiders are coming out of your computer.
Yeah, and then I would be late for the show, and then the people would suffer. We don't want that. So it's something you don't really think about until it just doesn't work, or until you moved into a different house, or until you're expanding on your house. Maybe you're adding a room. Maybe you're starting a business. Who knows? Maybe you're building an actual structure. Maybe you're building a new facility for your company. Maybe you are building a Blandings-style dream house, and you say, hold on a second. I don't know what I'm doing. Fortunately, there are people who do, and somebody in this case is Joe Squires and his business, Squires Electric. 503-252-1609, squireselectric.com, and they get you free estimates, too, which means, you know, it's not just like a blank check. You're going to know exactly, up front what needs to be done. I'm going to tell you about how much it's going to cost. No job too small or too large. Squireselectric.com, a proud supporter of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is Don Taylor.
Washington County residents concerned about adult businesses in their neighborhood shared their frustration at a town hall meeting Monday night. Nearly 200 people packed a Beaverton church for the meeting, which was called by the city of Beaverton, but prompted by SOS Oregon, an organization of people concerned about adult businesses. In particular, many people had questions about a lingerie modeling business called Pussycats. Neighbors said they questioned whether what goes on inside the business is legal, whether the business pays taxes, and whether it's up to code. Officials from Washington County and Beaverton said they will be looking for code violations, but have no evidence that any laws have been broken. In the past 2 months, neighbors have been complaining. There is not much more authorities can do to regulate adult businesses without changing the state's constitution, they said.
But when you say it's in a neighborhood, like it's not between two houses or something.
I don't know.
I mean, it's not like a guy's running it in his front lawn. It's like in a business district, I would imagine, right?
I guess.
I mean, I'm not suggesting you're a frequent patron of Pussycats or of Honeysuckles.
I'm just always sort of, I'm fascinated by the idea that the response always tends to be that there's no indication that anything illegal is going on inside these businesses. And it's like, really?
Okay, I actually don't know what you're saying right now.
Well, because I guess I don't know. I guess I don't know if anything illegal is going on inside these businesses.
Well, there's only one way to solve that problem,
but
Don.
Don't you kind of figure there probably is?
No, Don, I assume that in our system of government and in these United States, that all persons, all creeds, colors, nationalities. What was the question?
Adam.
Okay.
Ben Cunningham, who is the owner of Pussycat, said he's providing jobs in a sluggish economy.
Good for him.
And he said these jobs are allowing women to better themselves and in some cases pay for college.
Exactly. This is one of those things where we started that and we ended it, and I have no idea what side of anything you were on.
I have no idea what side of it I'm on either. I really don't. On the one hand, I believe that people should just do whatever they want to do. On the other hand, we live in a world where there are prostitution laws. And we have these businesses that skate, you know, in this sort of gray area where we go, we don't know if they're actually doing anything, you know. If we don't know if the ladies are actually having sex with the customers.
Well, which is true. We don't.
No, we don't. But again,
they don't know that we're not selling child slaves out of the Emerson News Network. We're not. But,
They're not selling lingerie either.
Well, I don't think they claim to be selling it. I think they claim to be modeling it.
Oh, okay.
Are they, in fact, modeling lingerie to the best of our knowledge? Yes.
Well, why are they modeling lingerie? What is the end result of that?
Looking at the lingerie, in the package, John, doesn't really tell you exactly, didn't say what you need to know. You know, a mannequin is not a living, moving, breathing human being as God created her.
So a gentleman
I should have been a lawyer.
A gentleman would go to this place and ask...
A gentleman and often couples, Don. That's the new burgeoning market for this sort of business.
And they would ask a young lady to wear various kinds of lingerie for them, so then they know what to buy when they go to, say, Macy's.
Or perhaps they just enjoy the aesthetic appeal of seeing a well-crafted young lady wearing lingerie, which is perfectly legal. In fact, like 89% of our economy is based on that desire. And I don't mean in Portland. I mean, like, in the world. So, hey, have at it. Rick Emerson says, yes, I don't even care if you're doing anything illegal. You know, whatever. Pay your taxes. I am... Somebody asked me if I was a libertarian, and I said no, because libertarians are crazy. And also typically a-holes. I am sort of I'm a lowercase libertarian, as our old friend Tom Likas would say, which means that I'm kind of from the political party of, like, leave me alone. So, whatever. As long as they're not, like, freeloading on my dime somehow, that doesn't really matter to me. I mean, sell whores by the truckful. I don't care.
I just have this great image in my mind, though, of this city meeting, and there are these people, standing up and being angry that there's, like, naughty things going on, and there's sexy things happening, and somebody else stands up and says, I'm worried that they're not paying their taxes. And then there's the one guy who stands up in the back and goes, how do we know that the building is up to code?
Well, there's always that guy. That guy always appears on that is the same guy you see on message boards who cannot refute anything in the previous post, and so he seizes upon, like, a double apostrophe that was typed at some point. That's always the same guy, by the way, that feels compelled to impress everyone by using the phrase ad hominem, which impresses no one. Stop it.
I'm concerned that perhaps they haven't upgraded their electrical system to 220 to handle the additional you know, power needed by the lights.
Too late, do I realize that this would have been a cunningly crafted segue into Squire's Electric.
It could have been.
Well, we'll find an excuse to bring the story back tomorrow. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up at 1 o'clock. Greatest songs ever made today. Also, Geek Watch. Also, Pop Culture Authority answers the question, why is E.T. saddled with a PG rating? This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Let's do some science.
Fantastic. Here's your science. A big face full of science here on Tuesday. This is Legion of News.
An unknown mongoose-like creature has been discovered in the wetlands of Madagascar. To the satisfaction of anyone who delights in new species but wishes they were a little bit more charismatic, this cat-sized carnivore's got heft. Biologists
I'm sorry, are you is this on a catwalk of some kind? Are you auctioning the animal off?
Apparently so. I have no idea
why
this is written this way.
At the end of my second Wheel of Fortune round?
He's a charismatic little devil.
He enjoys racquetball and candlelight dinners and men who aren't afraid to cry. He's a mongoose.
Biologists photographed the creature while surveying lemurs in 2004.
Lemur?
It resembled the brown-tailed mongoose, an inhabitant of Madagascar's eastern jungles, that was first described in 1837 by who, Rick? By French zoologist Isidore Geoffroy Saint-Hilaire.
I swear to God, I was just going to say Malcolm X if you didn't have the answer.
Further inspection, however, revealed differences between skulls, paws, and teeth. The new creature is formally described in the journal Systematics and Biodiversity. Because it was discovered by researchers from the Durrell Wildlife Conservation Trust, founded by naturalist and author Gerald Durrell, the new animal has been named Salinoia durrelli, or the Durrell's Vonsaira. Anyway, you can see a picture of that at rickemerson.com/pictures.
Fantastic.
Being held around the neck, and it doesn't look at all happy about it, frankly.
Really? Is it sort of a, who are you? Why are you here? Why are you filming me?
Let me go. I will bite you.
Have they only found the one?
I maybe so. I don't know. I'm sure when they say they found a new species, that probably means that they've found, like, several of them.
Who's to say? I mean, it just seems like if the thing has eluded detection this far, and then suddenly they come upon a bushel of them, it seems like either the creature just decided, well, let's come out of hiding, or else scientists are just, you know, they're just lying, and they've got a big bag of them back in the lab.
Madagascar is a freaky, creepy place. They're always finding, like, new animals there that don't exist anywhere else.
Well, we have to find new ones, Don. Replace the ones that we're... to replace the dozens that we exterminate every day.
Talk amongst yourselves, because I misplaced my damn story.
Well, if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, and that is now available... at this very moment. There you go. RickEmerson.com/pictures. You will see, wow, he does look unhappy. This is the sort of thing, you look at the animal, and I know that we tend to anthropomorphize these things, but if you look at this creature, and again, you can see this at RickEmerson.com/pictures, that's visual aids for October 12th, 2010. You can see, first of all, he appears to be kind of the grumpy old man of the mongoose, hedgehog, whatever he is, world. Also, you know that never in his life has he so deeply rued the fact that he is small. Because that sort of thing, like that you sense with every cat, specifically yours in this instance, where like if he was a little bit larger, you were a little bit smaller, no Dawn. You'd be on the back lawn being put into a bag right now.
No, he's peeved. Yeah. He's very peeved.
And he appears to have sort of a glassy-eyed sort of... I think he may in fact be hungering for brains, but that's just speculation. Here's Don Taylor.
Researchers have found that sugary and fatty foods can affect your brain chemistry in much the same way as drug addicts are affected by cocaine and heroin. We discussed this yesterday, in fact.
I don't believe we did.
Didn't
I believe we teased it, but I'm not sure that we actually got to it. Did we actually? If so, I apologize. This may have been a thing that was in the news 2 days in a row. Did we play sound from it?
No, we didn't.
Okay, then that's probably why.
Dr. Barry Norman. Yes, we did, because remember you said he sounded like your therapist.
Let's find out.
20 bucks later. No, he
totally
sounds
not.
Like Barack Obama.
That guy sounds just like Malcolm X.
So don't be hoodwinked.
All right. Let's see here.
Depending on the response of their brain chemistry to these highly palatable foods, for those types of people, I do believe that there are very strong similarities with addiction and illicit drugs such as cocaine and heroin.
Maybe.
Do you not remember us talking about this?
I remember making the observation that a guy sounded like my shrink. I don't remember, but today, like listening to the soundbite right now, I do not come to that same conclusion. So either it is a separate set of soundbites about the same story, or I have mislabeled something, or possibly I'm just confusing my shrinks, because there have been dozens. And I just remember,
I remember my current shrink because he's a guy, and so therefore he's like the one that I haven't been, you know, just, you know.
Well, this was
trying to impress with my rapier-like wit. All this—it's really the only shrink I haven't wanted to bonk. It's basically what I'm saying. This sounds like Stevie from Eastbound and Down, though.
Depending on the response of their brain chemistry to these highly palatable foods.
On our Hispanic adventures.
Right. Yeah, this is the thing where we talked about. It's like the similarity of serotonin and dopamine.
All right, and I made the observation about that's why they call it dope and
right.
Blah, 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 bang, bang, wow.
So there we go. All right. So never mind. Malaysia could be the first country in Asia to use genetically modified mosquitoes to battle a rise in dengue fever, government authorities said Monday. The program calls for genetically engineered male mosquitoes to be released into the wild that would mate with females and produce offspring that live shorter lives, thus curbing the population. Dengue fever, spread by the Aedes aegypti mosquito, is common in Asia and Latin America. Symptoms include high fever, joint pains, and nausea. Hey, I think that's what was wrong with me this weekend when I thought I had cat flu.
Well, that's great. That's great that it wasn't cat flu. It's, in fact, a thing that kills, like, millions of people every year. That's awesome.
In severe cases, it can lead to internal bleeding, liver enlargement, circulatory shutdown, and death.
Well, I look forward to all those things. Thanks so much. Be sure to lick a doorknob on the way out.
But anyway, they've attempted to keep to urge Malaysians to keep their neighborhoods clean and destroy stagnant sources of water, and they will have none of it. None of it, they say. And so they say, okay, we're going to just breed these mosquitoes that die faster and hope that perhaps less people will be bit.
Because that's easier than just throwing your poo away when you're done with it,
apparently,
I suppose.
So.
I was so hoping you were going to get into a Danny Kaye thing there with the Malaysia in Asia.
Oh.
But then I didn't know if you couldn't come up with another word because perhaps you had aphasia. Zam! All right, you're listening to a Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. More of this Noel Coward-esque wit can be heard at 1 p.m. shortly thereafter at rickemerson.com. RickEmerson.com. That is rickemerson.com. Coming up later on today, we'll have a Geek Watch, Pop Culture Authority, in which we answer all of the questions that burn within your brain. Today's question, why the PG rating for the movie E.T.? Why was the movie E.T. given a PG rating? Also, another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And by the way, I gotta say, I suppose it is redundant to say that the greatest songs ever made, you know, that they're fantastic. It's one of my favorite segments. But I gotta say, today, I am really, even by that standard, even using itself as a curve, I'm really looking forward to today's song. And here's the thing: you don't know what it is because I never reveal the song. Beforehand, we won't dwell on this, but I typically don't reveal the song beforehand. And it's not like some Paul Harvey thing where if you guess it, like, it's ruined or whatever. It's not about the element of surprise, but just, you know, to amuse myself, I try to write it so the song isn't immediately obvious, you know, to just the casual listener. Maybe you get to the end and you figure it out, ideally, like a second or two before we say it. You will figure out today's greatest song ever probably by the second paragraph or so.
Is that because I'm so clever and smart?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Well, I mean, you are. That's not why. I mean, you are those things regardless, Don. That is a separate issue. But I think that you have, quite like today's song. That's just a guess. But so that's coming up the Rick Emerson Show. 1 o'clock. Here is Don Taylor.
Students who go abroad while in college are likely to increase or even double their alcohol intake while they're away, a new study has found.
Can't believe what I'm hearing.
Drinking increased most dramatically in Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, the study by researchers at the University of Washington found. Students reported drinking more when they perceived their fellow travelers were drinking more heavily, and those who planned to make drinking part of their cultural immersion did so.
Researchers at the Center for the Bleeding Obvious.
The study, published in the current issue of Psychology of Addicted Behaviors, looked only at drinking habits of students who went abroad from the University of Washington. But UW graduate student Eric Peterson said he would expect to get similar results at other universities. The research didn't pinpoint why students drink more when they study abroad, but the results don't necessarily indicate binge drinking. Peterson said a drink or so each night with dinner could add up to the 10 drinks a week European visitors reported on average. Of the several thousand University of Washington students who studied abroad each year, 177 answered a questionnaire before they went away and when they returned. On average, these students doubled their drinking while abroad, but most returned to an average of 3 to 5 drinks a week when they returned to Seattle.
And the others returned in a form that was covered with vomit and smeared and illegible, reeked of stool. It just couldn't be understood.
I like the idea that when you're studying abroad, you're a college student studying in Australia, and your drinking doubles.
What is that you're doing right there?
That was just me implying.
Are you implying something about the Australian people?
Yes, that they're drunks and leshes.
I'm going to quote this back to you the next time you snark at me about making sweeping generalizations about somebody. Women! I'm sorry, there was something in my throat. It was the foul stench of hypocrisy. Here's Non Taylor. She's at the Legion of News news desk.
Two women are in the hospital and a man is in custody following a stabbing in Salem. The Marion County Sheriff's Office said deputies received a call about a domestic disturbance at around 7:45 p.m. When crews arrived, they found two women suffering from stab wounds. The victims were taken to Salem Hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The man was taken into custody shortly after deputies arrived. A few children inside the home at the time weren't injured, and they are now in the care of family members. Investigators aren't saying what may have motivated the stabbing, but it doesn't appear to have been a love triangle.
You know, it's going to be difficult to rent that place, Don, especially with all the blood and human leavings all over every surface, up to and including the carpet. Also, I would imagine maybe the tile walkway, maybe your hardwood flooring, maybe the grouting, the mortar there, the caulking between the tiles.
The linoleum in the bathroom.
And, it's just, a good blood smearing is hard to remove. And, and God forbid somebody comes in there with that, what is that called, luminol? Is that the stuff that's just like John Munch sprays everywhere, and then the thing, and then there's a big handprint and on the wall? You don't want to have that, because that's just, then it's a whole, they move the headstones but not the bodies thing, and it's just, it ends badly. Here's what you do. You contact Mr. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. May not actually clean crime scenes. 971-533-3211. Please don't ask him to do it. 971-533-3211. Or don't tell him it was my idea. But anything your feet might touch, anything that you might get, your normal wear and tear, your grime, your filth, your foulness, whether it's carpet that, you moved in and it was just an uninviting, hint of dirt, like a swatch just made entirely of sadness. If it's that, or if you've just been living in a place for a while and you just like you had some carpet and you haven't moved the furniture and so you got the tracked in path from the front door to the kitchen, whatever. Anything your feet touch, they'll get it looking good again, whether it's pet damage, whether, again, it's just, just stuff that happens. 971-533-3211. Please tell me you heard it here. Right here at Legion of News on Cascadia.fm. And is The Cleaning Solution. Here is Don Taylor.
It's time for entertainment news.
All right. Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, it didn't take long for Taylor Swift and her boyfriend Taylor Lautner to become Hollywood's newest couple. But then they broke up. Back in December of 2009, they announced they were just friends. I have no idea where the story is going. The short-lived courtship did result in some endearingly witty SNL shout-outs to one another, a slew of tabloid covers, and evidently a song on Swift's upcoming album, Speak Now. Oddly enough, that's where this news piece ends, so I guess we're supposed to be fascinated by the fact that she wrote a song about her ex-boyfriend.
About a boy.
About a boy.
All right, because that's new for her. Don't get me wrong.
Sorry, I even did that.
I like Taylor Swift. I really do. I legitimately like her, but I'm just saying it's like the journal only has so many pages, Taylor. So at some point, you will have to write about something that happened, like in the last 5 years.
I guess she apologizes to him in that song, according to the headline of the story that does not elaborate. All right. So, Christina Aguilera and her husband, music executive Jordan Bratman, have split, according to Us Weekly. A source close to Aguilera tells the magazine the couple have been separated for a few months. They met in 2002 and married in a lavish ceremony in 2005. The pair have not yet filed for divorce, but are living apart, and they will see how that goes.
I really think that there's a direct correlation between the amount of money you spend on your wedding or the amount of public attention you demand people give you for finding the love of your life. There's like an inverse ratio there, like how long your marriage will last. You spend $40,000, you will be divorced by the, before the cake is even put away.
And also that whole, we're so in love and it's going to last forever. And we finally met each other's soulmate. Never go on talk shows and say that.
Oh, man. Did you hear, and I'm willing to bet almost anything that the answer is no. Did you hear maybe it was the only single, but like the single from her. Her album that she put out earlier this year in, like, May or June.
Christina Aguilera?
Yeah.
I don't think
so. It was awful. It was terrible. It was just really the right...
Is that the song they used in the Target ad?
I have no way of knowing that. That is a... but thank you for not saying Target.
About being a superhero and...
No. I think it was off that might have been off the same record. No, it was this song called I'm Not Myself Tonight. It was the single. And again, I got no problem with, like... it's not teen pop, I guess, anymore, but, you know, like sort of dance pop or whatever. It was just awful. And it was one of those songs that was awful because immediately you could picture, you knew exactly who would listen to it and love it. And it was just, it was a lot of like 36-year-old women coming straight from an Applebee's and then going to a club somewhere, you know, and then like pressing their faces together so they could all get into a photo while clutching a lot of Cosmo glasses and commending themselves on being wild. It was awful. It was terrible. It was cringe-inducingly bad.
I am, on the other hand, really looking forward to that movie Burlesque with Cher and Christina Aguilera, which a friend of mine just said it looks like Showgirls in Chicago had a baby and then dressed it up like Liberace.
See, we should talk about this. Like, when is that coming out?
I have no idea. So I mean, I think it might be a Christmas release.
Of course. Because why not?
Okay. Melissa Etheridge's ex-wife, Tammy Lynn Michaels.
Speaking of, we're never going to get divorced because we're soulmates forever. Let's go on every camera and announce that we will never divorce.
Has exhibited a long, bitter streak since the couple ended their 9-year relationship in April. Over the weekend, Tammy's blog featured a post titled, "Just a Cornucopia of Thoughts," railing against her famous ex. "Her lawyer lies about me using the kids as pawns," Tammy, 35, writes in a long poem ruminating over the personal and monetary difficulties Etheridge, 49, is reportedly putting her through.
What makes it a poem?
I think because...
Does it rhyme?
No, I think because it's in partial sentences lined up on top of each other.
No, I've seen that on the internet. That's just bad writing.
Yeah.
You can find some of that online.
She claims that Etheridge hasn't supported her and their almost four-year-old twins with enough money to eat. "When I want to get cash just last week for the three of us to eat, nothing," she wrote. "I might never trust another soul again."
We'll all have to learn to live with your disappointment.
Her blog is called Hollywood Farm Girl, so you can go there and see her.
And her name is what?
Maybe Poems. Tammy Lynn Michaels.
I have trouble keeping track of Melissa Etheridge's soulmates and which one she has most recently broken up with. Please tell me it's Tammy with an I.
No, it's Tammy with a Y.
It's too bad, because now we can't put the little heart over the I. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
Kim Kardashian says she was sorry she posed for Playboy, but she doesn't appear to have any problem bearing all in and being dipped in silver paint for W Magazine. She gives an interview and she in the magazine on which she appears naked on the cover. On her public perception, she says, "I'm not a drinker, and when I'm up on the table dancing, it's for the picture. Then I sit right back down. I play into the perception of me, but it's not really me." And the show reveals that.
I don't have any idea what we're talking about. What show?
Keeping up with the Kardashians. All right. I guess that's, in her mind, she thinks that's better, that she's jumping up on a table and dancing.
Because she's drunk? Not because she's drunk.
No, because people are taking her picture. That's better than actually doing it because she's been drinking.
Well, I mean, I guess if she was just doing it at home with no one around, that might be cause for a butterfly net. I have like 100 questions here, though. First of all, when did she pose for Playboy?
I don't know.
I mean, second of all, this is then pointless, because I was going to say, second of all, was it really posing for Playboy, or was it one of those things where they say, you know, Scarlett Johansson is posing nude for PETA, and, you know, but then it's like she's on the cover, like, you know, covering herself with her arm, which is not posing nude.
No, not really.
Not in the real sense of the word. And then, thirdly, I had no idea that W Magazine even existed still. It was right next to Brill's Content.
I loved Brill's Content.
Really?
I did.
And their editor, John Macheski?
I used to enjoy reading that.
All right.
Back in the day.
Okay. I just had no idea that W even existed. I haven't even thought about that magazine for like 10 years. That was JFK Jr.'s magazine, right?
Was it?
Yeah, didn't he start that? I'm almost certain he did.
Maybe he did.
The W was started by JFK Jr.
Hmm.
And then, you know, whatever. And then there was a whole thing about, was it, you know, after he went in the drink, was it going to continue? And it did. But then it just sort of like...
I've never picked up a copy of it. I've never actually read it.
Like nearly every magazine in existence, it just sort of faded from memory. All right, and here's Dawn Taylor.
The injury and accident-plagued set of Transformers 3 had another bad day on Monday when a Washington, D.C. police SUV inadvertently became part of a high-speed car chase and collided epically with the yellow Chevy Camaro known in the franchise as Bumblebee. There's video available online that you can find. A caravan of Transformers 3 vehicles were driving down 3rd Street and Maryland Avenue in Washington, D.C., when in the distance, a white police car entered the shot. When it reached the intersection, the Bumblebee zoomed into the scene and smashed into the corner of the SUV.
You just became, by the way, you just became an old person right now in front of all of us because you just said the Bumblebee.
The Bumblebee. Yeah. Okay.
So this Transformer, the Bumblebee, please now to tell me about his motivation as a character.
According to police sources, the officer in the car was responding to a call about a suspicious package incident nearby. The unnamed officer was taken to a local hospital with minor injuries. Thankfully, no bystanders were hurt, but it's unknown if the stunt driver was harmed.
All right, then. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Is that the end of entertainment news?
Oh, God, I hope so.
All right, there you go. There's your entertainment news for... Tuesday, brought to you by Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them by the way, by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Castalia Language Center, they offer Spanish language classes to adults. That is when you are...
not a child?
I was going to say not... Is it pequeño? Is that small?
Muy pequeño. Very small.
Very small. Unless you're a little person. In which case, I guess you would be... I don't even know how to navigate my way out
alto,
of this.
Alto, which would be tall.
Really?
Yeah, or alta if you're a female.
Is that why an alto sax is? It's because of the size of the instrument, not the tone that it makes.
Quite possibly.
That's interesting. I hadn't really ever thought about that.
Both language, the language does have Latin roots.
You know, never mind. No, we're not going to get. I'm not going to get sidetracked. anywho, is this why it's? So is this why it's like? He's a Latin. You know, he's a person of Latin descent, which makes no sense because unless you're from Rome. Like you're, by the way, unless you're from Rome and from a long time ago.
I believe it, Latin America is where Latino and the.
Right, but
the
I'm saying it's
Latin
not like. Is that because it was conquered by Rome or something? What makes it Latin America?
Well, it's been a long time since, you know, I was, you know, conquering things, but I don't know. I wasn't there.
Okay,
I'm old, but I'm not that old.
If that's your excuse, Don Taylor. Castalia Language Center probably can't solve any of these issues, but that's exactly one of their big selling points, by the way, because a lot of times you take a language class and it's a lot about the history and the culture and the whatever, which is fascinating, but which is maybe not what you're in the class there for.
And we obviously don't know anything about that.
And also you would be you'd be ill-advised to really, if I were to tell you, like, that's the sort of culture you'll learn, I mean, you would be foolish to take that advice anyway. So you can learn the language, and the great thing is you learn the language, then you can learn the culture on your own because, hey, you're learning the language, you're speaking the language, you can speak it conversationally, and allows you, just to be fluent in the language that is more and more important, and keeps your brain in shape, keeps your thought processes sharp, and if you're an adult, they can find something that works with your schedule, they can find something that works no matter what day of the week, no matter what time of day, and, you know, if you got some Spanish classes in your background, you know a little bit, or some Spanish, but, you know, you want to polish it up, or maybe you just feel like you need a refresher, they can handle all levels of Spanish literacy and fluency. So you can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. It is Spanish language classes for adults with class sizes of no more than how many people, Don?
Ocho.
That is 8 persons. There's probably a word for persons, but I don't know what that is. You know why? Haven't taken the class. So
siete y uno.
If I were really, really fluent, which I'm not, because it's a whole catch 22, which is like a catch... I don't even know what that would be in Spanish. The point is, I'm inside a whole Rashomon thing right now, so you'll have to forgive me. But next month, my wife will be back, and then we will be enrolling in class there together. Shamefully, she'll be in a separate class because she's smarter than I am. So I'll be like in the remedial class with the other guys just right off the street.
And soon we'll be doing like another whole show that is just for our Spanish language listeners.
And we should just have like sort of Morris Garrett style in the background, a guy just sort of doing the show in Spanish, but not even on a separate channel. Just like, you know, just over the top of us. You can find out more about Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. It is Legion of News. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock featuring Pop Culture Authority. Today we answer the question, why was the movie E.T. given a PG rating? We'll also have another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made and Geek Watch. Here is Don Taylor.
Security concerns prompted JetBlue officials to remove a passenger from a flight headed to Florida on Saturday night from New York's JFK International Airport. The flight was delayed for nearly 3 hours as passengers and baggage were rescreened. The flight arrived in Tampa about 12:30 a.m. Sunday. Penny Medulla, who was on the flight, says the man was not detained.
He was still in the terminal when we deplaned and went back through security, and he was still there when we got back on at the JetBlue counter.
Chris Diaz, who was on the flight, says the passenger's behavior was questionable.
There was no struggle. He was acting strangely. One passenger said, I remember, that he wasn't acting abnormal, but he wasn't acting normal at the same time.
Okay.
You're dumb.
Wow.
Boy, howdy. That's just my constitutionally protected opinion, by the way. Wow.
So we learned nothing more about this story from listening to those people.
Thick as two short planks. God. All right. By the way, can I just, on a linguistic note, can I just point out that deplane isn't really a term. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a correct term, because that implies, because it's the opposite of to plane, which, by the way, is shaping a board with a shaving device. Or, you know, to be skimming across the surface of the water. You don't plane, right? Everybody, we're going to plane now. That's something you do with your kid to get him to eat rutabaga.
Now, deplane is an awkward word.
It's just made up. It is more made up terminology. Here's Don Taylor.
A Missouri man traveled at least 3/4 of a mile through a 24-inch sanitary sewer after he fell into a manhole this morning. Emergency crews pulled the 30-year-old man from a different manhole near a body of water at the 15th hole of Creekmoor Golf Course in Raymore, Missouri. He was said to have serious life-threatening injuries. The workers, part of a construction crew working to install new sewer pipes outside a credit union around 8:20 a.m., he was being lowered into the manhole, a manhole, when he fell from his harness and was swept away by rushing water in the 24-inch sanitary sewer. A co-worker reportedly went to the fire department to report the man's disappearance.
So this wasn't here. This was in Missouri, you said? Okay. All right.
A family remains upset 5 days after giving Tomalina, their pet turtle, to the Gulfarium in Okaloosa Island and watching it get eaten by an alligator.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I just didn't expect that story to terminate in that sentence.
Brenda Guthrie and her 8-year-old son, Colton, witnessed Tomalina's death as the red-eared slider disappeared into the alligator's
jaws. Was it really
jaws.
Called a slider?
Yes.
Well, aptly named, I suppose.
When the two looked away from the site, she said they could hear the crunching of the turtle shell.
Oh, good God.
According to the Northwest Florida Daily News.
Hold on a second. I have to do something to make this a little bit...
He was jumping up and down and screaming, Guthrie told the newspaper about her son's reaction. He was shouting, oh no, alligator, let it go.
Oh, now see, why do you have to make it all sad? Before it was hilarious, now it's just depressing.
Guthrie said they decided to donate Tomalina after the turtle outgrew its aquarium.
Did they not tell them that we're going to put it in a cage with an alligator?
They chose the Gulfarium so they could come back and visit the turtle. They brought it there Thursday afternoon and watched as workers put the slider into the alligator exhibit, where two other red-eared sliders already live.
Being placed into a diorama of death.
Gulfarium officials said the alligator, Gracie, had just been hand-fed, and that the gators normally don't express interest in the turtles.
Okay. It's
horrible for a little kid to have to see that, General Manager Don Abrams said. That's not unusual to put sliders in the same exhibit. The alligators have never eaten a turtle in the exhibit before.
I mean, it is, you know, it's like sad for the kid, although it doesn't sound like it was like a thing. It doesn't sound like he was, you know, like the turtle been there for like 50 years or whatever. So, you know, and kids have got brains full of, you know, mush anyway, so he'll probably have forgotten about it. But
they gave him a meet and greet with the dolphins to try and make up for it, but his mom is saying, I don't really think that's enough.
They gave them a meet and greet. They just gave the meat to the alligator. Not funny. But you think that, like, the parents would have said, like, let me tell you about a little thing called the circle of life, son, before, you know, the crunching sounds happen.
The sad thing is, you know that the aquarium people were like, no, the turtle will be fine. There's already two turtles in there.
Yeah, and it's probably one of those things where, like, well, let's invite the press so that everybody can see how we're in. Oh, God, no, no! You know, and then it's just, you know, and then it's just like some horrible sort of shell-covered Hindenburg happening in there. All right. In my mind's eye, though, I do see the kids sinking into it. Why?
Yeah.
Wisbowski! All right. Well.
There's some therapy in his future.
On that sort of note, we will bring the curtain down on another installment of Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. At the news desk, the buzz-killing Don Taylor. Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Ackler, and of course, Chief of Staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Emerson Grants provided by New Millennium Landscaping and Maintenance. Find out more about that at rickemerson.com. Speaking of rickemerson.com, The Rick Emerson Show begins there in just a few moments after a musical interlude. If you have not yet subscribed, you can do so for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. Just 32 cents a day. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Until then, thank you for listening.